Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'll be with you this next hour because, well, it's the weekend before the holidays. We've got Christmas and New Year's coming up, and we're here live, in contradistinction to many programs which are canned this weekend. We're here to answer your questions. 888-302-3684. And we got lots to talk about this hour. We'd love to have you join in. 888-302-3684 is our number. And among the stories that we're going to tackle, we're going to talk a little bit about the flu vaccine and some inconvenient truths about the flu vaccine. Yeah, the flu is it's a serious thing, and literally it can kill you. But there are some real problems associated with the flu vaccine. We're going to point that out in just a few moments. All right, before we get to your phone calls, I wrote an article last week about the scary mental health risks of going meatless. Actually, it was a response to a bunch of articles that appeared in the media that were kind of scare stories about vegetarians, suggesting that maybe, just maybe, vegetarians are a little nuts. The result of their meager diets. And this is all based, this is actually not new. The analysis that I wrote, you can check it out at drhoffman.com, I think is kind of a balanced analysis of the evidence. We do a deep dive on the evidence linking vegetarianism or reduced animal protein intake with the risk of mental disorders. And one of the articles that spawned this media feeding frenzy is in Women's Health magazine. It's an article by Jill Waltbeezer, and I've heard her interviewed. She actually sounds more reasonable in an interview than she does in the article. But she recounts scary stories of women, especially going on vegetarian diets. Remember, this is a women's magazine. And she cites the case of Ramsey, a Columbia University professor, and who went on a vegetarian diet, or actually who reports on a vegetarian diet. She says, "I hear from vegetarians every day. They have this terrible depression and anxiety, and they don't understand why. So what's up with that?" According to an Australian study that came out, I think it was 2010, vegetarians reported being less optimistic about the future than meat eaters. What's more, they were 18% more likely to report depression, 28% more likely to suffer panic attacks and anxiety. And a separate German study backs this up, finding that vegetarians were 15% more prone to depressive conditions, twice as likely to suffer from anxiety disorders. What's going on here? Well, actually, the studies in question did not state that vegetarianism causes people to suffer depression or anxiety. The conclusion of those studies was that it wasn't clear why vegetarian was associated with these psychological conditions. By the way, it's a pretty definite trend in most studies that look at this issue that there is a higher risk of depression and anxiety among vegetarians. There's one exception to that, and that's a study done among Seventh-day Adventists in Southern California, and they compared Seventh-day Adventists who were vegetarian. That's a religion that advocates vegetarianism versus Seventh-day Adventists who weren't vegetarian, and it turns out that the mental health and balance of the ones who were vegetarian was better than those who weren't vegetarian. So that was an outlier study, but it may have been just pertinent to the narrow confines of the Seventh-day Adventist community, which is a close-knit community, and maybe more strict adherence to vegetarianism was a marker for more community involvement, religious involvement. That's something that may have confounded those results. But the vast majority of studies that look at this issue suggest that there is indeed a correlation between depression, anxiety, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and vegetarianism. And the conclusion of many of the researchers in this field is that people who are already a little bit predisposed to, shall we say, heightened emotional sensitivity, or perhaps with a little bit of an obsessive streak, gravitate more towards a vegetarian diet for psychological reasons. And that may be the case, but we cannot ignore some possible biochemical connections to depression in people who eat a very restricted diet, a diet that is bereft of animal protein, especially the omega-3 fatty acids you get from fish. Many vegetarians are risk B12 or zinc or iron deficiency. We know that iron deficiency is a major risk factor for fatigue and depression. Same thing with vitamin B12. Zinc is important for neurotransmitters in the brain. And speaking of neurotransmitters in the brain, they're derived from protein. And if your dietary protein is very skimpy, you might not be able to produce serotonin and the feel-good catecholamines in your brain that rely on amino acid building blocks. And similarly, vegetarian diets sometimes are high in carbohydrates, low in fat and protein. That causes people to be on a blood sugar roller coaster. They may suffer from hypoglycemia, which is a major trigger for anxiety. Show me a young person suffering from anxiety. The vast majority of them have either magnesium deficiency, hypoglycemia, or particularly in women, hormonal causes of anxiety. And then finally, and most importantly, deficiency of omega-3 fatty acids. Now, you can get them if you supplement. Some vegetarians are ethical vegetarians. They don't want to take fish oil capsules. They'll take flax oil or algae-based omega-3s, and that helps some. But many individuals don't have the ability to convert omega-3 precursors of EPA and DHEA into the good stuff, the stuff that's helpful for brain and mood. So notwithstanding that fact, a prudent vegetarian diet where you take additional supplements, balance your blood sugar, could work well for many individuals. And I know that, hey, you know, this discussion could trigger a firestorm of controversy, because many of you out there are vegetarians doing it successfully. But nonetheless, vegetarian can come with some unexpected side effects if not prudently undertaken. Check out the article at drhoffman.com. We got a lot of hits on that article, and I think you'll find it interesting. All right, we'll take your phone calls momentarily. 888-302-3684. We're here. We're live. And we'll take your questions in just a moment on this weekend edition, this pre-holiday edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Staying healthy and building immunity begins in your gut, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. So keeping your digestive tract healthy is imperative to overall health and well-being. And there's no better way to improve your digestive health than taking probiotics, the friendly bacteria that fight off the bad bugs that can cause digestive problems and break down your immune system. Dr. O'Hara's exclusive probiotic formula delivers live beneficial bacteria in an easily absorbed formula that provides optimal digestive support, boosts immunity, and increases energy through better absorption of nutrients. Backed by over 20 years of scientific research and centuries-old wisdom, daily use of Dr. O'Hara's probiotics will revolutionize your family healthcare strategy. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System. A complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And you can call us at 888-302-3684. We already have several callers. But hey, if maybe you're too preoccupied to call us today, but you still have a burning question, you can email us your question to a radio program, one word, at AOL.com. And we won't be able to answer all your questions in writing, but we will use your question as fodder for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. You can find our Q&A with Layla at drhoffman.com. It's one of our daily podcasts that we post on iTunes and we post on our website. And you can also follow via Facebook and Twitter because we get our podcast out on social media. All right. Let's take a call. Oh, by the way, coming up, we're going to talk about some inconvenient truths about the flu vaccine. But first, let's talk to Howard from New Jersey. How are you doing?
Best of the holidays to you, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, all the best to you. Yeah.
My wife, we received a pathology report on Friday about a lesion on her face.
Yeah.
It came back squamous cell carcinoma in situ.
Yeah.
I'd like your opinion on our treatment options.
Okay. So, you know, obviously it's kind of up to the dermatologist whether this needs to be excised. And often the procedure that's used is something called the Mohs procedure. Now, the Mohs procedure involves going under local anesthesia and sitting in the dermatologist's office or the surgical suite and getting progressively larger areas carved out of your skin. And the innovation in the Mohs procedure is that they immediately do pathology to make sure they have what's called a clear margin, which means that they got it all. And they'll sometimes, and they try to do the minimal amount because sometimes the surgery is deforming. You know, it's in the face. It might affect the nose or the ears or the eyelids. And so they try to do as little as possible, but they try to do as much as is necessary to make sure that the area is clear of cancer. Now, you say in situ means, in fact, it's not invasive. It's localized, so that's a good sign. But in the previous hour, which you may have missed, and I'm going to reiterate this, I talked about some real innovations when it comes to skin cancer. And we really have to divide skin cancer into two major categories. One is melanoma, which is a different breed of cat completely. Different rules apply to melanoma. And the other types of skin cancer, the localized skin cancers, which usually are not life-threatening but can be deforming, like squamous cell cancer and basal cell cancer, 90% of skin cancers are those two. And there actually are supplements that you may not have heard of that can be used to either prevent skin cancer or, once you have skin cancer, reduce the risk that it'll come back. And I wrote an article on this at the beginning of the summer. In June of 2015. You can find it at drhoffman.com. It's just, if you Google skin cancer, you'll find it. Put that in the search box on our website. We talked about 10 natural sun care products that you may not have heard of. And among them, the most prominent is niacinamide. Niacinamide is the non-flushing kind of vitamin B3. It's not niacin. It doesn't lower cholesterol. But niacinamide is very helpful for reducing the risk of skin cancer recurrence. So in a study, and there's actually a big study in the New England Journal of Medicine, but already last year they had a study where individuals took niacinamide 500 milligrams twice daily for a year, and there was a 23% reduction in skin cancers in the niacinamide group, and there was a dramatic reduction in these precancers, which are called actinic keratoses. So these are like, well, I kind of call them barnacles that you basically the dermatologist has to scrape off, and they're not cancerous, but they're, you know, not attractive. So these results are only applicable to basal cell and squamous cell cancers and not melanoma. But among the other things that are helpful for prevention of skin cancer, vitamin D has been shown to be prevented even against melanoma. Lycopene, helpful. Gamma tocopherol vitamin E, EGCG from green tea, has been shown to have generalized anti-cancer effects. And they're doing some clinical trials now to establish whether topical application direct application of EGCG gel or cream can retard the progression of basal cell skin cancer. So, you know, these are things that can be helpful. And I list 10, but the main thing, and this dermatologists are now well aware of this, and they're prescribing it, niacinamide 500 milligrams twice daily can reduce your risk of recurrence. So is she faced with a decision about surgery?
Well, we didn't know if the Mohs was the way to go or if freezing it off was the way to go.
Yeah, it's almost like...
She's actually been taking the niacinamide for about a month. But
that's not long enough. Yeah, that's not long enough. That's going to help in the future, but it won't help this. So you know, there's also a question last hour had to do with something called blue light therapy, where a blue light is shined on your skin, and it activates a certain chemical that they apply to the skin, and that has also an anti-skin cancer effect. And it's helpful for not just pinpoint areas, but, you know, where people have large areas of precancerous skin, that can help. That can help to reduce the risk.
This lesion is about 1 centimeter in diameter.
That's pretty big. That's pretty big. So maybe, you know, maybe it's something that's going to require surgery to make sure that it's not dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Well, all right.
Set up to go to Cornell Weill for this.
That's a good place. Good place. Good place. Yeah, that's a good procedure. And, you know, unfortunately, you have to do it. All right. This item comes to us from Clinical Infectious Disease. It's an inconvenient truth about the flu vaccine. You know, the government is unwavering in its support of the flu vaccine. You get the message every year, get your annual flu shot. Get it every year to protect yourself from the flu. And I'm not minimizing this. The flu can be a big deal. It can be more than just misery, because I recently read of a case of a relatively healthy young man. He was 22, who developed the flu and died. Unusual, but can happen. So, well, they tell us to get the vaccine every year, but there's a fly in the ointment on that, because a recent study suggests that annual vaccines reduce the effectiveness of the flu vaccine. This is not to say that the flu vaccine is completely ineffective. It is somewhat effective. It depends from year to year. Last year, by some estimates, it was only 14% effective, but some years they nail it and it's more effective. But to simply, by virtue of the fact of getting it every single year, year after year, it may reduce the effect of subsequent vaccinations. This is a real dilemma for public health officials trying to figure out why that is, because it may undermine adherence to the recommendation that you get your annual flu vaccine. But hey, it's for real, and we got to report it. And in just a moment, when we return, we'll report on another issue related to the flu vaccine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
At Nordic Naturals, we know that a commitment to deliver the world's safest, most effective omega oils requires an exceptional process. That's why we manage every step of production from boat to bottle. That includes sustainably sourcing wild-caught fish from well-managed fisheries. It means using state-of-the-art equipment and technology at our manufacturing plant in Arctic Norway. Nordic Naturals bottles and encapsulates our omega-3s at our own facility and carefully ships products from our eco-friendly headquarters in California. The result? Nordic Naturals products have received more than 40 awards for taste, innovation, and product excellence. You can trust the quality of Nordic Naturals products and know you're getting all the health benefits omega-3 fish oils offer. Nordic Naturals' high-quality, great-tasting omega-3s make staying healthy easier for you and your family. When choosing an omega-3 fish oil product, choose the number one fish oil in the U.S. Choose Nordic Naturals. Available at natural product retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684. And I invite you to go to drhoffman.com and check out our latest article. Those of you who receive our newsletter got the article this week, and it is a compendium of the top 10 podcasts of 2015 with luminaries like Suzanne Summers and Dr. David Perlmutter among the top 10. We assembled and curated a list of the top podcasts of the year, and we invite you to listen to them over the holiday weeks because, well, you've got a little more time on your hands, and it gives you an opportunity to brush up on your nutritional listening. So check it out at drhoffman.com, our top 10 podcasts of 2015. Let's talk to Paul in New Jersey.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for your excellent program. Listened to it for over 20 years, as well as the excellent supplements that you provide. It's really helped me a lot personally.
Oh, great. That's nice to hear.
And Doctor, this call is about our 8-year-old daughter. She came down a few weeks ago with the virus. We're not sure if it was the flu or not. We never really had that subtyped. But it was fairly bad fever, 102 or 102.5. Congestion. No cough, just body aches and so forth. But it was the sickest she's ever been, really. And so we kept her out of school for 4 days. Then she seemed to get better. And, mm-hmm. and she went back to school 4 days. Either she picked up something else or had a relapse. We believe in vitamins. We give her C, D, fish oil, probiotics, shake every mm-hmm. day. We're big believers in natural health. And so we were, kind of shocked at the severity of this and the fact that either it came back or she picked up a secondary virus. So,
yeah, I've noticed that there's something that's going around, and I saw it last year, beginning to see it this year. There seems to be some kind of a two-phased virus where mm-hmm. you get an initial attack, and then you seem to get better, and then a week or two later you seem to get of what seems to be a relapse or possibly a reinfection. The one thing you have to look out for whenever you have a virus is that sometimes viruses can make you more susceptible to bacterial infections. So people mm-hmm. will have a cold, and then they seem to get better, but then they start to get that concrete feeling in their sinuses and perhaps a little pressure and pain and yellowish or greenish mucus, and that becomes a superimposed bacterial infection. So you have to think about that possibility, too. Have you taken her to the pediatrician on this one? Or
Yes, we have here in Princeton, we have you probably know the woman. She's excellent, a complementary physician like yourself. And mm-hmm. she felt she would get over it in several days. But, she did, as a precaution, said, well, if it doesn't clear up in about 5-6 days, take her for blood tests.
Right, and run some tests to see if she has something like mono or something like that. The role of the pediatrician is kind of a tough one because, on the one hand, they're supposed to provide lots of reassurance because the vast majority of children's infections like this are self-limited, but patients, parents are nervous and they may not have experienced this with other kids, and this may be the most sick that the child has gotten. And fevers of 102.5 are scary in adults, but in kids, they're more routine. So a lot of what a pediatrician has to do is say, hey, let's watch it. Let's make sure she gets better. Probably, tincture of thyme and, maybe some extra vitamin C will help. When you come down with a viral infection, sometimes an additional dose of vitamin D is warranted. Now, I know you have this child already on vitamin D. Children should be taking vitamin D to prevent upper respiratory infections, and they can take 1,000 or 2,000 international units of vitamin D. And sometimes an additional dose when you get sick is warranted. For adults, I might suggest one dose of 50,000. For children, perhaps something like 10 or even 20,000 for a larger child, one dose, because that actually seems to curtail the severity of many viral infections. If this is not an issue that she's sick all the time, this is a one-off. If she were to be sick all the time, I might recommend something like transfer factor, which actually transfers immunity. It's derived from colostrum, and just like mother's milk, it helps to provide some external immunoglobulins that actually help the immune system fight off infection. And then there's, other things, zinc, selenium. Sometimes, be probably careful with your child. I don't think that children necessarily require lots and lots of vitamins. Even a daily multivitamin for kids, I'm not even sure that's entirely warranted. But kids should be taking at least omega-3 fatty acids, possibly probiotics, especially if they've taken antibiotics, and vitamin D at a minimum. And if kids are on a very finicky diet, maybe a supplement can help. Kids who are, vegan, vegetarian, very fussy, they may need some extras to fill in the gaps. But I think that, from what it sounds like, you got to kind of hang in there and watch. And then, again, with the pediatrician being complimentary, she's probably pretty conservative about dropping the bomb with antibiotics, fortunately.
Yes, sir. And would you say 10,000 IUs of D at one time, doctor?
That could be okay even for a relatively young child. Do it for a day or two, and that might actually hasten your recovery. That could be good. All right. Let's talk about this item on flu vaccines. Here's a second inconvenient truth about flu vaccines. You know, they tell you to get your annual flu vaccine. Well, in the previous feature, we heard about the potential downside to getting the vaccine every year. Here's another potential problem. They also tell a lot of people you need to be on a statin drug, and some people really do. But here's the problem. In a recent study in the Journal of Infectious Diseases, they found that about 3 weeks after getting vaccinated, people who didn't take statins, who did not take statins, produced 38 to 67% more antibodies against the flu virus than people who use the cholesterol drugs. In other words, the statin drugs weakened the efficacy of the flu vaccine. And here's the proof. I mean, that's measuring antibodies, but what about in terms of risk of getting an infection? Well, it turns out that the effectiveness of the vaccine in protecting against flu wasn't very good. It was just 26% for people not on statins. But for those on statins, it was just 12.6%, so only half as effective in individuals who are taking statins. And they're not exactly sure why it is that statins may make the flu vaccine less effective, but it's worth investigating because, hey, there may be some off-target effects of statin drugs. We know that statin drugs may, for example, increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, particularly in women. And this may be one of the unanticipated effects of statin drugs, which makes it all the more important for us to be highly selective in who gets these medications rather than a blanket recommendation. Okay, you're male, you're over 50, you have a family history of high cholesterol, you know, you're a couple pounds overweight. Well, virtually everyone could be put on a statin drug under those very, very, very lenient criteria. All right. 888-302-3684 is our number. Let's talk to Denise in New Jersey. How you doing? Hi, Denise. Hello, Denise. Are you there? Oh, Denise is not there. We'll go to a break. And when we come back, we invite your phone calls, 888-302-3684. We've got lots more to talk about on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic, is completely odorless, and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We're taking phone calls. Let's talk to Denise, who we lost earlier. Are you back, Denise?
Yes, I am. I was here all along by doctor. But anyway, I have heard that that this nitric oxide is very good for asthma. I have asthma crossover syndrome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get out of breath when I exercise a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I can walk for about a half an hour and pretty briskly, but after that, I'm starting to get out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody said nitric oxide would be good. I think I heard that on your show, too.
Yeah, there are various products that are building blocks for nitric oxide, and they're based on a dietary principle, which is that certain foods like beets, spinach as well, rich in nitric oxide building blocks, rich in nitrates. And these are converted by the body into nitric oxide, which can be helpful for expanding the blood vessels, but also expanding the bronchioles. The bronchioles
okay.
are the tubes in your lungs that, in reaction to smoke or perfume, or in this case, just simply exertion, clamp down and cause you to, wheeze. So nitric oxide could be helpful, but other things that could be helpful, magnesium helps to prevent spasm. Vitamin C as an antioxidant helps to prevent spasm. There's even some studies that suggest that ginkgo biloba, which is supposed to make you smart, also helps asthma. So, and of course, omega-3 fatty acids have a wonderful effect in asthma. So there are a variety of things you can be doing.
Now, and my second question was, is there anything that you can do to improve? I just went to my cardiologist on a routine basis, and he said that my ejection fraction is like going between 48 and 52.
That's actually not bad. Does he suggest that that's a big problem?
No, he's not suggesting it's a big problem, but, I'm one of these persons that,
you got a B+, you want an A+ instead. Okay.
Yes, that's exactly
okay.
right.
So,
and I'm
so just in the spirit of optimization, let's talk about things to improve ejection fraction, although, you kind of have to get down into the 30s to, 40s to experience symptoms. Ejection fraction means the amount of blood that your heart pumps out. It's a measure of the strength of your heart. And in patients who have extreme heart failure, they can barely get across the room without huffing and puffing, and they're candidates for heart transplants. Their ejection fraction might be in the teens. So if you don't have a good ejection fraction, you can have congestive heart failure, you can have swelling of the ankles, or you can have water in your lungs. These are the signs of lowered ejection fraction. And among the things that help ejection fraction, I think foremost, is coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. That can help. Also taking additional magnesium can help. You can help yourself by dropping additional pounds because every additional pound of weight that you have above your optimal weight puts extra strain on your heart. So these are some of the things that can make a difference. And, some nitric oxide inducing compounds can be helpful for improving ejection fraction because, nitroglycerin is the ultimate nitric oxide drug. And that was used for people who were basically checking out with severe heart problems. It dramatically expands the blood vessels and permits the heart to pump more vigorously. So there you have it. Those are some of the things that you can do.
Thank you very much, doctor.
Sure, my pleasure. Let's talk now to Irving from Long Island. How are you, Irving? Hello, Irving. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, Irving. What's your question?
Oh, I wanted to ask you. I eat a lot of I eat a lot of spinach every day, and I eat it raw. Now I heard that some vegetables have to be cooked before the nutrients can be released. Mm-hmm. Does that apply to spinach or maybe even carrots and so on?
That's a really good question, Irving. And are you trying to emulate Popeye by eating a lot of spinach? Is that the idea? you kind of grew up in the year of Popeye and Bluto and olive oil. And,
I just saw Mayo Clinic and Time Magazine did a study of the most healthful foods. And spinach was on both lists.
So I
think it must be valuable.
Yeah, so let me address that. Is that indeed when you cook green vegetables, green leafy vegetables, there is actually some loss of the nutrient properties, certain of the nutrition properties, not all of the nutritional properties, in particular B vitamins and some of the antioxidants. And especially if you boil the spinach, because then you might as well drink the spinach water, because a lot of it goes into the water. But steamed spinach, and spinach is ideal for steaming, because you just want to apply a little bit of heat. And one of the advantages of steaming spinach is, you know, it's kind of hard to eat a whole bag of spinach. It's kind of daunting. But when you cook it down, you can really concentrate it. And then it's actually easier for you to assimilate the nutrients in the spinach. Moreover, if you saute the spinach after you've lightly steamed it in a little bit of olive oil, or any oil for that matter, you're going to make the carotenoids and the lycopene and the lutein and the zeaxanthin in the spinach. These are nutrients especially that are healthy for the eye. More bioavailable. Spinach is actually one of the premier sources of lutein and zeaxanthin, which is helpful for the retina. So that's a fat-soluble nutrient, and it's best absorbed in a fatty matrix. In other words, the vehicle needs to be a little bit of fat in the meal, and sautéing the spinach is a good way of releasing that. Same thing with vitamin K, that is also a fat-soluble nutrient. People who take Coumadin, for example, are told not to take a lot of spinach because there's a lot of vitamin K in spinach, which is good for you. But if you're taking Coumadin, it can somewhat reverse the effects of the Coumadin. But that is a fat-soluble nutrient, best absorbed with a little bit of oil. Spinach is also a great source of iron. There's a lot of iron in spinach. I think there's about 25% of your daily intake of iron in just 100 grams of spinach. But that iron is not as bioavailable as the iron that you're going to get from meat sources. Heme is a better source of iron if you need to boost your iron, and that's going to be from red meat or dark meat poultry or dark meat fish. Eggs, too, contain a fair amount of iron. And when it comes to this Popeye effect, you know, Popeye opens up a can of spinach and his muscles expand and he's awesome. That actually, originally it was attributed to the iron in spinach, but actually the iron is less important than the nitric oxide in spinach. We were talking to the last caller about nitric oxide, which is something that you find in beets and beet leaves, but also in spinach. Spinach is fairly high in dietary nitrates, which are a building block for the nitric oxide that your body needs. So, there's a lot of good stuff in spinach. And you should enjoy the spinach. The one caution is it's thought that for people who have oxalate stones, spinach is rather high in oxalates. And if you have the most common type of kidney stones, the calcium oxalate stones, you may want to somewhat curtail excessive consumption of spinach. You can have it now and then, but we sometimes put people on low oxalate diets. Also, there's an unusual type of arthritis that's a pseudo-gout arthritis, which is associated not with uric acid but with oxalate. And putting people on an low oxalate diet helps to ease their pain and discomfort. Same thing with certain types of vaginal pain, vulvar pain syndrome or vulvodynia sometimes responds to a low oxalate diet. So there you have it. That's the down low on spinach. And I think that gives you a pretty good idea of some of its potential. All right, let's do a little bit of nutritional potpourri here. Here's a study on selenium for age-related cognitive decline. You know, we talk about fancy nutrients, nutrients that can be pretty pricey. In this study, it was done in Brazil. 31 elderly Brazilian individuals who had mild cognitive impairment were given one Brazil nut per day. Do you know how much selenium is in one Brazil nut? A lot. 289 micrograms of selenium. That's equivalent. That's even more than what you get in the average selenium supplement. And what they found was that after 6 months, improvements in verbal fluency and in the ability to construct little models, these are tests of intellectual ability, were significantly greater in the Brazil nut group than in the control group. It almost sounds too good to be true, but how could it be that selenium is so beneficial for the brain? Selenium is an essential cofactor for something called glutathione. So glutathione peroxidase, that helps protect us against free radicals, and maybe, just maybe, increasing levels of glutathione with selenium will help to protect our brains. And speaking of protecting our brains, think melatonin for Alzheimer's disease. 80 patients, average age 75, with mild to moderate Alzheimer's, were randomly assigned to receive either 2 milligrams of melatonin or placebo each night for 6 weeks. And what they found was that melatonin significantly improved cognitive performance. And how could that be? Melatonin helps to normalize the sleep-wake cycle, which is often disrupted in dementia, and therefore might help patients think better. Well, thanks very much for listening, and I hope that you check out our website at drhoffman.com. This broadcast is just the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon. We got lots more. Merry Christmas.